Having now laid a certain foundation, I want to try to speak to you, but move somewhat more quickly through a number of points that flow from and are important ramifications or aspects of this overall strategic approach. First of all, I want to speak to the slogan. We are building a movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core. This is a slogan which, like everything else, can be turned into its opposite, turned into something meaningless and lifeless, which is not actually carrying out what's concentrated in the slogan itself. In order to get at this, let's look at the way the word are is presented in this slogan. You notice that it's capitalized. In other words, the word is given emphasis. It's not, we are building a movement for revolution. Oh, you know, we are building a movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core. Why is it presented that way? Why is the R emphasized? Because it's giving stress to an active orientation that this is what we're doing. We're not asking permission to do it from anybody, certainly not from the ruling class, but not from any of the masses either. We're not taking a poll to see if people think it's a good idea. We're not going out and asking people if it would be all right with them if we do it. We're not going out to see how many people say I'm with that and then determining whether it's a good idea or not. None of that populist epistemology or other incorrect approaches is what's concentrated in what this slogan is and is supposed to be all about. This is an orientation. This is what we're doing. Why are we doing it? Because this is our thing, or because in the 1960s, some of us, you know, got inspired by the idea of revolution and were just too fucking stubborn to give up on it. You know, the old Japanese, you know, Hirohito soldiers who haven't gotten the news that the war is over, the revolution's over and down. No! It's because, once again, a scientific, dialectical, materialist method and approach tells us that this is what's both necessary but also possible in order to bring about the emancipation of humanity, not only from the present conditions and relations of oppression and exploitation, but from thousands of years, as it's put, of tradition's chains. So this is scientifically grounded, and on that science, once again, back to the basic point, what is the basis for this? What basis are we proceeding on? On that scientific grounding, with that scientific method and approach, leading us to understand that this is both necessary and possible. Not, you know, not something preordained, not some religious thing that's bound to be brought about by supernatural forces or just by our good intentions or the strength of our will or our determination. But something that is we can scientifically establish is both necessary and possible. This is the basis on which we're proceeding. And this is why when we go out to mass of people, it's not that we don't, once again, you know, basics 4.11. It's not that what they think is unimportant, but it doesn't determine reality. So when we go out to people, we're not asking their permission or see if they think it's a good idea. We're telling them, this is what we're doing because this is both necessary and possible. This is what's needed to get rid of all the horrors that people are subjected to. And this has to be our active and, you know, on a scientific foundation, enthusiastic orientation. You know, we don't care what a bunch of, you know, bourgeois representatives and a bunch of fucking opportunists and others say. You know, we pay attention to it because it's part of the objective reality out there that we have to deal with. But it doesn't determine what we're doing or how we're approaching this. This is determined scientifically, and our enthusiasm and our passion for this flows from that science. And from a recognition, which again is scientifically grounded, that the world is not only a horror, but that it's totally unnecessary for this to be. And it could be a radically different and much better way. So that's the first point. Why emphasize the we are? Because we are. And God damn it, we better be. This is what we're doing. And, you know, in a certain way, at any given time, if somebody doesn't like it, that's their tough shit. Now, you know, that doesn't mean we write them off or treat them as an enemy if they're not. But I mean, that doesn't stop us from doing what we're doing. It doesn't even give us pause. Even if a whole bunch of people don't like it, who should be with it at any given time? That doesn't give us pause. We are building a movement for revolution, and you should get with it, and here's why. And then there are all the components that I've spoken to and will speak to in some aspects further that go into that. But this is the core. We are doing this because this is what's needed. And that's a scientifically established foundation. It's based on a scientific method and scientific analysis and synthesis. So that's one point. We are building a movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core. Not we are thinking about it, not we are talking about it, not we'll talk to you about it if you would deign to listen to us for a few minutes or come to our bookstore. We are. So that's point one. That's basic point of orientation. Then there's the fact that this slogan has been changed recently. That is, it's been added to. The slogan that was out there for a number of years was, we are building a movement for revolution. But it's been changed to say, we are building a movement for revolution with the addition of, and building the party as its leading core. Why? Because it goes back to the point that I was emphasizing just a little while ago, that out of all the organized expressions of the, you know, accumulating forces, the most important is the party itself. That without a party based on the science of communism, as it's been developed through the new synthesis of communism, without a party based on the scientific method and approach of dialectical materialism, none of this, none of the stirrings, none of the struggles, none of the questioning, none of the upheavals, none of the even convulsions in society can go where they need to go. And if the party is not being actively built all along the way, in dialectical relation with building the broader revolutionary movement, then even if a revolutionary situation should arise, or at least the immediate potential for one, even if society should be deeply convulsed in a crisis that the ruling class has no easy way out of, and that every move the ruling class makes only makes the crisis worse for them, even if that should come about, there will be no chance of it getting resolved in a way that would be in the fundamental interest of the masses of people, not just in this country, but in the world as a whole, and ultimately all of humanity. So we are not just going out to build a movement, and yes, not just a movement in general, but a movement for revolution. Fight the power and transform the people for revolution. Prepare minds and organize forces, accumulate forces for revolution. So we are building a movement, but we are not just building a movement. We are building a movement for revolution. And we are building the party as its leading core. And this is, all these are points of contention and struggle that we should be very actively and positively and enthusiastically taking up. Why? Because our idea is better than somebody else's? No, because this, once again, is scientifically grounded. It is a correct reflection of reality and the contradictory motion and dynamics of reality, and where this can be taken through all the struggle that is involved in that, that would actually be in the fundamental interests of the masses of people and ultimately all of humanity. Now, you can use that phrase, the fundamental interests of the masses, but what is, look, that translates into the tears of the mothers and fathers whose kids are shot down in the street. It translates into the horror of a young girl being betrayed and sold into sexual slavery and imprisoned in sexual slavery. It translates into the bodies being blown apart unnecessarily in the wars waged by these imperialists and other reactionaries. It translates into moving away from the destruction of the environment that goes on. This is what we're talking about when we talk about the fundamental interests of the mass of people. It's not some abstract formulation. It is a formulation. It is a scientific formulation. It is an abstraction in the correct sense. It is a theoretical abstraction that is a concentration of reality. But that reality is made up of all the suffering of the masses of people and all the ways in which that suffering is perpetuated and perpetrated by this system, and the fact that all this is unnecessary. That's what that statement, that theoretical abstraction that the communist revolution is in the fundamental interests of the masses of oppressed people and ultimately all of humanity, that's what that means. That's the living reality of that. So we are, on that basis, that scientifically founded basis, we are, yes, we are, building a movement for revolution, and we are, yes, we are, building the party as its leading core. Now, next I want to speak to the formulation that's in the statement on the strategy for revolution, which can be posed as the thousands and millions. This has everything to do, I mean, it's speaking to, you know, the way that thousands now can be brought forward, oriented, and trained in a revolutionary way while influencing millions. Millions being influenced by the actions of those thousands, and millions being influenced by the overall work of the party at the core of all this, in dialectical relationship with and in transforming and struggling to transform the larger objective world in the way that I was speaking to at the beginning. Once again, it's concentrated in those opening six paragraphs of part two of Making and Emancipating. This has everything to do, once again, with accumulating or not accumulating forces. For what? For revolution. Are we actually just trying to have a diffuse and diverse, you know, grouping of, you know, amorphous, I say, not diverse, amorphous grouping of people without any form and substance, you know, that we can call thousands because, again, we got a strategy statement that says we should have thousands, so let's find some, you know, vague way in which we can say there are thousands of people. No, this is thousands of people being one to the banner of revolution, but not just to the banner in the abstract, to the actual substance of that revolution, to what it is, what it, you know, what its scientific method reveals about the possibility and necessity and the character as well of the revolution, and to being one as well to that method itself, that scientific method of communism as it's been developed further through the new synthesis of communism. So thousands need to be brought forward who are more and more themselves taking up this banner of revolution in a figurative sense, but sometimes very directly in a literal sense, and manifesting that out into the world and struggling with others to win them to it. This is an actual concrete objective to, in this period, actually win thousands of people, to accumulate forces for revolution in the thousands now while influencing millions in a revolutionary direction. This is a crucial expression and an aspect of hastening while awaiting. It has everything to do with what I was saying earlier about the dialectical, not the linear, but the dialectical relationship between everything we're doing now and what's concentrated and on the possibility dealing with when there is a qualitatively different revolutionary situation and revolutionary masses. So this is not just some vague, you know, formless general idea, you know, it's, if we talk to several thousand people, that's, you know, that means we have thousands. No, it's actually accumulating thousands now for revolution through all the diverse streams and the interconnection and the correct handling of all the contradictions involved in what? In what we are doing. Building a movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core. So we should be, once again, this has to do with accumulating forces for revolution. Once more, we should be measuring, as a very significant yardstick, we should be measuring what we're doing and how we're doing against that objective of actually accumulating forces for revolution, but not just in the abstract, actually bringing forward and winning and organizing in the revolutionary movement and moving forward many into the party at any given time, thousands, while millions are being influenced. And you think about it concretely. Let's go back to that dialectical relation and the struggle not only with the direct representatives and forces of the ruling class, but all these other forces out there in the field. What's going to happen if, you know, when, let's posit that, let's theorize right now that such a revolutionary situation had emerged and all these other forces are in the field contending. Does it make a difference whether all along the way toward that we've had a growing accumulation first hundreds, but then not in some distant future, but more, you know, immediately, thousands and growing thousands who are actually moving in a revolutionary direction under the banner of revolutionary communism? Is that, whether or not that's happened, is that have only minor or, in, you know, or totally, you know, insignificant influence on what would happen in a revolutionary situation, or would it have tremendous bearing on whether that situation is not only squandered, but much worse, is led into yet another horror for the mass of people in one form or another. So this is an active goal. If we're actually, and we are actually, building a movement for revolution and the party at its core, then actually bringing forward, orienting and training in a revolutionary way on the basis of communism and the new synthesis of communism, thousands in this period, while influencing millions and preparing those thousands to lead and to become millions under the revolutionary banner with the emergence of such a revolutionary situation. That has to be an active goal, something actively worked for, and an active and ongoing yardstick, a major yardstick against which to measure our work. And whether, in fact, we are building a movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core, or we are doing something else, which is not what we should be and need to be doing. Now, a particular aspect of this that I want to speak to is what could be called bridging the chasm, and it is a real chasm, between what we have recognized and what has been said about the potential role in this revolution of basic youth, and basic masses more broadly. And specifically, what's said about this in Revolution Nothing Less, how we should be approaching these youth. And in fact, where things are now and what's being done now, particularly with regard to these basic youth. It's a fact that a lot of these basic youth, out of, you know, the dynamics of the contradictions of this system and how those are posing themselves and moving now, a lot of the youth are in this bad shit. Or they are completely disoriented. Even if they're not, you know, actively caught up in some bad shit, they're disoriented and don't understand and don't recognize even the need for radical change and certainly for a revolution. But once again, is our assessment that among these basic youth, as well as basic masses more broadly, there is tremendous potential for this revolution, is that based, once again, on some moral precept or some variation of identity politics, in other words, some kind of idealist notion that we can't give up on? Or is it scientifically grounded? Is it once again based on a scientific analysis and synthesis through the application of dialectical materialism of the actual potential and what that's based on, the actual fundamental interest, once again, of these youth? And where, therefore, through a tremendous amount of struggle, they can be led and unleashed and led again to actually become a driving dynamic force for this revolution. And the answer is the latter. This is not just, these youth are terribly oppressed, so they must be a major force for revolution. This is actually based on a lot of, you know, scientific work that's gone into analyzing the social composition and its changingness in the U.S. over a number of decades, reaching back into the early 20th century and even before, the whole analysis of the separation of the labor movement from the communist movement that's been discussed in a number of documents, talks of mine in particular, and an actual scientific analysis of what are the dynamics that these youth are caught up in. What effects does it actually have on their lives? And what is the way out of this for the masses of these youth? That's what this is scientifically based on. And we need to keep deepening that scientific analysis and synthesis through the living application of dialectical materialism. But as we're doing that, we need to be actively working on bridging this tremendous chasm between that scientifically established and grounded recognition of this real revolutionary potential on the one hand, and on the other hand, where the masses of these youth are at now, and where they're being pulled by the dynamics of the system. And it's not going to, this chasm is not going to be bridged by any kind of Taylorism, by any kind of reification of these youth as if somehow the revolution resides within them in their inner essence in some sort of metaphysical and idealist sense, but only on the basis, once again, of science and what it tells us about the dynamics of society, its effects on them, and where their fundamental interests actually do lie, and what, and to put it that way, is the way out for them, and the role they can play in relation not only to their own emancipation from all this, but the emancipation of all of humanity from all of the different horrific chains that are fastened on masses of people. So, you know, we've identified on a scientific basis what we call a backbone and driving force role in this revolution for these basic youth and basic masses generally. And that's not to say they're the only source of revolutionary forces or the only, grouping in society or social force that can be brought forward powerfully around this revolution. But they are a critical one. And we do have to find the means to forge across this chasm and bring forward these youth. And we have to do it now, not in some future far-off time. And not in some sort of utopian way, but by applying and being rigorous in applying our scientific method and approach. And we have to do it through a tremendous amount of struggle. We have to do it by applying, in the way that I've been discussing this, fight the power and transform the people for revolution. We have to do it by recognizing and carrying out the overall process of preparing minds and organizing forces in which all of this transforming the thinking of blocks of people is not the only, but is the pivotal thing that needs to be carried forward. So there's a lot of struggles to be waged with these youth, both in terms of transforming their thinking and in terms of finding the means and forms through which they can actually come forward and be a decisive force in what we are doing, building the movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core. And we need to go to work on this systematically and consistently and in a real sense, relentlessly. We need to find the ways to bring forward groups of these youth, and then we need to find the ways to work with them to bring forward others and to have an impact broadly in society, not just to bring forward others from among whom they come, that is, so to speak, that is, other basic youth only, although that's very important, but also to have an impact and influence not through bogarting, not through posturing, but through carrying out revolutionary work and representing and actively working for this revolution among all strata of the people. Now, in the New Year's message, in my New Year's message this year, 2014, there is a basic orientation and a basic approach set forth, which follows up on what's, set forth in the talk and film Revolution Nothing Yes, about how to go at the contradictions that are holding back these basic youth. How not to tail, but how to struggle. How to directly address the basic questions that are in them, the basic contradictions that are holding them back and keeping them chained to what is and even keeping them, misdirected in the context of everything this system is putting them through. So that's something also to look at and to study. How is this approached in Revolution Nothing Less, but also in a very concentrated way in that New Year's message. How the contradictions and a lot of the way people's thinking is being shaped by the contradictions now, in the absence of our systematic work and struggle for revolution, and how to go at carrying out that systematic work and struggle. This is something that we have to work on with a pit bull determination. Relentlessly, how to break through and bring forward layer after layer of these youth and involve them in bringing forward others, not just among the basic masses and basic youth themselves, but from all strata of society, and to have a growing impact and influence on the mood and thinking of people, not again by posturing, but by actively taking up and fighting for the movement for revolution and the party as its leading core. So we have to both carry out the struggle on the basis of the right orientation and the right scientific method and approach, and we have to work very hard and very scientifically and involve youth in struggling together with us about how, basic youth, about how to create and develop the means or various means for involving growing numbers of these youth and other basic masses, as well as people from other strata in the movement for revolution, and moving them forward through this movement for revolution to actually become part of the vanguard of this revolution, the party at its core. And this involves many different components. It involves, obviously, fighting the power, standing up against the ways in which they're oppressed, but also other sections of people, and people in other countries and other parts of the world are oppressed and battered and blown apart by this system. But it also involves all-around ideological work and struggle, transforming the people, transforming their thinking. For example, there have been embryonic efforts that have been made which need to be further developed and carried through on and built on to involve basic masses, including basic youth, in discussion and struggle over things like evolution and the broader questions that it touches on or directly interconnects with, such as the question of religion and whether one's going to have a scientific or a religious approach to reality. And this is something that, by the way, I want to say I thought was very important in the article on the article taking off from the upsurge in Egypt, the article, you know, by Albert called The Impasse, you know, for short, where it said that many of these opportunist forces, I'm paraphrasing, but many of these opportunist forces only see religion in its role as a opiate for the people. You know, Marx, these forces are always invoking, these opportunists are always invoking Marx's statement that religion is the opiate of the people in a way to say, and you know, in effect, and after all, don't people need this opiate? You know, it is the heart of the heartless world. Don't people need heart? And they're taking Marx's statement there and they're perverting it into being a rationalization for not struggling with people around religion. But also, as is pointed out in that Impasse article, again, I'm paraphrasing, this, you know, these opportunists miss or step right over or push to the side the recognition that religion is not just consolation. It's not just an opiate. It's not just a numbing. It's not just some heart in a heartless world. It is also a worldview. It is also an ideology. It is also a way of attempting to interpret reality, and it's one whose interpretation is fundamentally wrong and ultimately very harmful to masses of people, reinforcing the chains on them. In the mental chains and the actual chains of all-around oppression and exploitation. So involving the basic youth is not just a matter of let's get together and fight, although that's part of it, fight the power. But it's also the all-around work to enable them to transform their thinking, not just so they like our narrative better. No, that's not how we're proceeding or not how we should be proceeding. So that they actually come to a more and more scientific approach to an understanding of reality, and there on that basis see both the necessity and the possibility to radically transform that reality through revolution and guided by the new synthesis, communism, and its development further through the new synthesis of communism. This is, if we don't carry out all-around work in which, yes, standing up and fighting back, fighting the power is extremely important, but is only one part of the overall process that needs to involve, that these youth need to be part of. An overall process in which, in a pivotal sense, transforming the thinking of the people is what's, you know, that's what's pivotally involved in this overall process of fight the power and transform the people for revolution and preparing minds and organizing forces for revolution. So in this way, in this overall sense, in which transforming the thinking of blocks of people is pivotal, this is what I mean by saying we need to be working and struggling to bring forward growing numbers of basic youth and other basic masses, and working and struggling including together with them, on this basis, to create and develop means for involving growing numbers of them, as well as people from other strata, in the movement for revolution, and moving them forward through this to actually become part of the vanguard force, the Revolutionary Communist Party, at the core of this movement for revolution. Now, at the same time, we have to also look at this in the broader context of what we've described as the two maximizings, as a key part of our overall approach to building the movement for revolution. As important as it is, as crucial as it is to actually fight through and bring forward growing waves, not just ones and twos, but growing waves of these basic youth and other basic masses to the movement for revolution, and through that movement to the party at the core of it. This cannot be done in a vacuum, and it cannot be done just by carrying out even the best work to do this by itself and in and of itself. This has to be in the context of the overall building of the movement for revolution and the party at its core, and all the different ways that this has to be carried out, some of the key ones I have touched on here. And the two maximizings means that we have to be working with the same line, with the same scientific method and approach among all the different strata of the people, not just the basic masses, but among students, the intelligentsia and academia, among other sections of the petty bourgeoisie, and through many broad and diverse streams to actually build the movement for revolution, to correctly carry out the relationship between particular struggles uniting people broadly and the overall movement for revolution, to actually correctly prepare minds and organize forces, fight the power and transform the people for revolution, in which, once again, transforming the thinking of blocks of people is a thread running through the entire thing and pivotal to the overall process. But we really have to bear down on carrying out work among all different strata and the dialectical back and forth influence of this in a positive way. For basic masses to see people from other strata stepping forward, even when they are doing so around other banners, in many cases, something like Occupy, for example, a couple of years ago, has a positive influence, at least in a beginning way, among basic masses, feeling there are other. They're always told that they're surrounded and that nobody, you know, that yes, you're being kicked in the face, but nobody gives a damn. And it's all too true that not enough people give a damn now, and we have to go to work on that. Part of which is taking on all this identity politics bullshit that, you know, well, you know, yes, it's terrible what's happening to black people, but I'm not black, so that has nothing to do with me, or I'm not black, and I can't do anything about that. We have to take our, you know, Latino or a woman or whatever. We have to, you know, I'm not gay, so that's not my thing. We have to break through all that as one key pillar of the oppressive system that needs to be knocked down in people's understanding and how they're acting or not acting accordingly. But it has to be part of an overall process, and at the same time, we have to really bear down and make breakthroughs on this. We can't just talk about it. We actually have to accumulate forces through all the different aspects, through the overall process, and in all the ways that I've been speaking to and others which have been spoken to more fully in other documents. So with that as backdrop, I want to turn to the question of the ensemble of revolutionary work now. This is our way of identifying what are key concentrations of social contradictions and key objectives that we need to go to work on. Once again, going back to what I said at the beginning, in the context of the larger dynamics flowing out of the basic contradictions of this system and the interpenetration of those contradictions. This is an identification of key concentrations of social contradictions and key objectives that we need to be working on in order to break through and make, you know, urgently needed advances. And yes, building the movement for revolution, which we are building, and building the party as its leading core, which we are building. Now, the formulation has been used, and it's a very real one, that the contradiction we're facing immediately, looking at the actual situation in our party, its dynamics, the contradiction of that party, and that in the context of the larger society and world and the contradictions that are at play there, if you will. The formulation has been brought forward, and it's very real, that we have to make breakthroughs and reascend on the path of revolution. Or, you know, to paraphrase Mao, we will fall into a deep hole and break our bones. And this is very real. This is another way, a very particular and concentrated way of posing the larger problem that the larger crossroads that the communist movement as a whole in the world is facing, as it's put in the manifesto from our party. Communism, the beginning of a new stage. Vanguard of the future or residue of the past. This, you know, this is a contradiction that's being posed for communist forces throughout the world and for the communist movement throughout the world and for the whole struggle for communism, even beyond the particular organized movement, the whole struggle for communism, you know, even beyond, once again, organized forces that are genuinely communist and organized forces which claim the banner of communism but are anything but. And are said opportunists and even in some cases counter-revolutionary. But for the larger struggle for communism, this is what's acutely being posed. Vanguard of the future or residue of the past. And as this takes shape in our party, it is reascend, make breakthroughs to actually begin ascending on the road of revolution in some qualitative ways or break our bones and with all the consequences of that. Not just in terms of our party being broken apart, no longer able to, you know, to do all the things that I've been talking about to transform the objective world in the direction of revolution, but actually setting back the struggle for communism in the world in very significant ways. This is posed very immediately and very acutely. And it's with this recognition, as well as in the broader context of what we need to be doing out in the world to build the movement for revolution and build the party as its leading core, that we have, you know, formulated this ensemble of revolutionary work as not the entire content of our work, but the main focus and concentration of our revolutionary work in this period. And I say not the entire content because, once again, going back to what was discussed at the beginning in relation to those six paragraphs from Part 2 of Making and Emancipating, there are other things happening in the world which we cannot ignore and which have a direct effect or an indirect effect, but nevertheless a significant effect on the overall terrain and on the overall work that we need to be doing and the challenges we need to be confronting in building the movement for revolution and the party as its leading core. So the ensemble is a concentration, but not the entirety of everything we need. It is a concentrated focus of the revolutionary work we need to be carrying out now. But it is not the entirety of what we need to be doing to confront and transform contradictions in the direction of revolution and ultimately communism worldwide. So I want to begin by talking about why is BA Everywhere the leading edge of this overall ensemble. This has been talked about, this, like many others, this formulation has been used and it has been misused and abused as much as it's been used or even more perhaps. Once again, it comes down to, are we being scientific or are we being essentially religious and idealist? You know, and this can be gotten at by looking at the acutely contradictory elements of the original editorial on BA Everywhere. On the one hand, as has been pointed out, there were some serious errors, some seriously wrong formulations in that original editorial, which did tend in the direction of and influence people toward a religious rather than a scientific viewpoint. Statements along the lines that, you know, without BA Everywhere, simply revolution is not possible. And in essence, without BA revolution and the leadership of BA directly, you know, not, you know, revolution is not possible. That is not the line that needs to be guiding BA Everywhere and its role as the leading edge in the overall ensemble. And that has been pointed out in the, you know, sharply, and there needs to be a deepening of the understanding of why that is so, what is wrong with that kind of orientation, and how it is in contradiction to the correct understanding and what the correct understanding is about that. On the other hand, there were some important correct formulations in that original editorial, which of course have been retained in the editorial as it has been rewritten to correct what was seriously erroneous and formulations that were leading people and pointing people in the wrong direction. And in particular, in that editorial, it makes the point that BA Everywhere is not just about the promotion of an individual in some abstract sense or in some way divorced from the role that that person plays in relation to what we do have to be all about, namely building the movement for revolution, building the party as its core, at its core, and struggling to transform society and the world toward the goal of communism. First, you know, through the overthrow of the capitalism and imperialism, the establishment of socialism with a dictatorship of the proletariat, and then continuing to advance toward a communist world. That person and the work of that person, the body of work and the method of approach concentrated and brought forward in the new synthesis of communism, associated with and brought forward by that person, is what is a concentration of what this is all about and what it all has to be aiming for. What we're promoting when we're promoting BA Everywhere is the advance in the understanding of necessity, the possibility, the character, the strategy, and the means for a revolution aiming for the final goal of communism. This is a continuation with further leaps, and yes, some ruptures and breaks with secondary but not insignificant aspects of communism, which, as I have said previously, is the way that every science develops. And every scientific approach to changing the world, which is what science is, after all. Science is not just an abstraction to understand the world. It is also an approach to changing the world in any sphere of science, whether medicine or physics or biology or what have you. So, what's said in that editorial that is very correct and very important is that correctly understood and correctly approached, not in a religious way, but as in a scientific way, understanding this as a concentration of the most advanced expression of the strategic approach to and the scientific grounding for revolution aiming for communism, BA Everywhere provides the overall context and the underlying foundation for all the different elements of the work that we are doing. Not, again, because the point of everything we're doing is to promote BA in some personal sense, divorced from what BA is all about and what BA leadership is leading people toward, but precisely in the sense in which I was just speaking about it, as the method and approach, the new synthesis, the means, the understanding, the scientific approach to actually carrying forward the struggle toward the goal for which everything we're about is aiming, namely revolution and ultimately communism in the world. That's what we're promoting with BA Everywhere. We're promoting a further development of the scientific method and approach and everything that flows from that approach in terms of the struggle to bring about revolution in the world and ultimately achieve the final goal of communism in the world as a whole. And that provides, again, the framework and the context for all the other work we're doing to fight the power and to transform the people for revolution. Because otherwise, without that overall framework and context, it's going to be pulled into something other than for revolution. Now let's be clear, just carrying out BA everywhere in the most correct way, once again, let's not fall into metaphysics and religion and idealism. That is not some magic elixir which guarantees that our work won't go off course and become non-revolutionary. That would, again, would be unscientific. It's not some sort of magic potion. Well, if we sprinkle some BA everywhere around, then when we carry out the two mass initiatives and when we do the website and so on, then that'll guarantee that it'll all be for revolution. No, it's incorrectly and actively carrying out BA everywhere in dialectical relation with all the other elements of this ensemble and the overall revolutionary work that we're doing. It's in that way that we have the foundation to carry forward the struggle to keep this on the revolutionary course and to actually be building a movement for revolution and building the party as its core. If we don't have that foundation, if we're not struggling to proceed on the basis of that foundation, and it is a struggle, it's not a magic potion, it's not a guarantee, but if we're not struggling to carry things out on that foundation, then it's guaranteed that the gravitational pull to come under the wing of the bourgeoisie will affect not only masses that we're together with in waging struggles, but on ourselves, on our party itself. So the BA Everywhere is bringing to the fore and providing an all-around framework of what this is all for. But that too is a struggle. Is that going to be, as we've seen, and as we should understand, this is a struggle also over whether or not BA Everywhere, as well as the overall ensemble and the entirety of our revolutionary work, is carried out on a revolutionary basis or transformed into something else. By the gravitational pull of the influence of the larger society and world and what is still dominant in the world in terms of relations, economically, socially, politically, and in terms of culture and ideology, namely the dominance of the bourgeois system of capitalism, imperialism, and other systems of exploitation and oppression. So the BA Everywhere is a way of providing a leading edge to all of our work, to the ensemble and our revolutionary work as a whole, and providing a revolutionary communist foundation for that work, even as I've been emphasizing, there needs to be ongoing struggle to forge the work of BA Everywhere itself on an actual basis of revolution and communism, and not have it be turned into something else. And this is another contradiction we have to handle correctly. Just because it's true objectively that what's concentrated in the new synthesis of communism and the leadership of BA is in fact the scientific foundation and strategic approach to revolution and communism doesn't mean that it can't be transformed into something else and how it's taken up and approached. Everything in the world is contradiction, and everything in the world can be turned into its opposite through struggle. And, you know, we've seen that. The dictatorship of the proletariat can be turned into the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie without dropping the name dictatorship of the proletariat. Or socialism can be turned into capitalism with or without, and often without dropping the name socialism. And communism can be turned into its opposite without ever dropping the name communism. So it's a matter of the substance of this. It's a matter of the method and approach. It's a matter of the science. It's a matter of whether what is being brought forward when we're carrying out BA Everywhere is actually what it represents and embodies, namely the new synthesis of communism and leadership toward the goal of revolution and communism, or whether it's fashioned into something else, transformed into its opposite in effect. At the same time, and as the other side of yet another important contradiction, this campaign of BA Everywhere is not and should not be understood and approached as a flat, linear thing of just reaching out and involving people in whatever way they can be involved at whatever level of unity they might seek to find. In whatever way we can get them to contribute to BA Everywhere. But it's a matter of correctly handling this very important contradiction between the leading aspect, and it does need to be the leading aspect of what is represented by the leadership of BA and the new synthesis of communism. On the one hand, and on the other hand, the fact that objectively there is a basis for many people to be involved in this campaign who do not agree even with the goal of communism, let alone with everything that is represented in the new synthesis of communism and the leadership of BA. So on the one hand, another way this contradiction is posed or could be posed is that BA Everywhere is not just a campaign in some, you know, general sense. It's not a flat, linear thing. But in fact constitutes a form of class struggle in the ideological realm. Understood, again, not in some sort of economist, narrow, reified way. But struggle in the ideological realm over what is the problem and solution in the world, to put it that way. And what role does the new synthesis of communism and the leadership of BA play in relation to that? All that on the one hand, that being a form of ideological struggle, not just simply putting this out and seeing what people think about it, but engaging them in an active ideological struggle about what's true about this. All that on the one hand, and on the other hand, actually having the orientation and actively seeking the means to involve many people and growing numbers of people who at any given time are not one or not fully one to that, but do think that it's very important that the questions raised by what's concentrated in BA Everywhere, wither humanity, if you will. What is the problem? What is the solution? What is going on in the world? Why is it going on? Does it have to go on? If there's a solution to it, what is the solution? How do we bring about that solution? That all those big questions that are very much at the heart of what the new synthesis of communism and the leadership of BA is all about, all those questions need to be out there in society having major impact. Everyone who recognizes that, with whatever disagreements they may have, we should be working to find the ways and working with them to involve them in finding ways for them to contribute to this campaign, even while we carry forward and carry out the ideological struggle over all that with them as well as more broadly. Again, I spoke about the mass initiatives and referred to something I wrote recently about who should be involved in these mass initiatives, and on the other hand, what is our approach to them and coming from where we need to be coming from. Well, the same applies to BA Everywhere. Who should be involved in BA Everywhere? Everyone who recognizes, or once again, can be one through struggle, let me emphasize, to see that the questions raised by the new synthesis of communism and what is represented by BA as the concentration of the leadership around that new synthesis, that all that needs to be out in society in a big way, having a major impact in society, be actively being discussed and debated, even while many such people may not agree with all or even perhaps much of the actual content of that new synthesis of communism and what is represented by the leadership of BA. But everyone who thinks it's important for the questions that are raised by that, the big questions it raises, to be out in society in a major way, impacting society and the discourse in society, the debate and struggle in society in a major way. All such people are people who potentially can be and who need to be involved in BA Everywhere. Just as in the two mass initiatives, everyone who understands or can be one to see that the outrages these mass initiatives are taking up are intolerable and must be fought against needs to be involved and potentially can be involved in these mass initiatives even while we are bringing forward our full understanding of not only what is represented by these, by what these mass initiatives are taking up, but the overall context in which it fits in society and the world as a whole. And it's important to understand and approach this ensemble precisely as an ensemble, an overall process of carrying forward, not the entirety, but a concentrated focus of revolutionary work in this period. An ensemble, an overall process, which is greater than just the sum of its parts, greater not only than any component, including its leading edge, VA everywhere, but greater than the sum of its parts. By which I mean that all the different parts of this and the carrying out of this should be seen as not only an overall process, but one in which there's the dialectical relation between these things is being actively developed and actively, you know, worked on to contribute to, yes, building that movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core. That's the way we need to be. Not people who don't agree with us about what this overall ensemble is about, but may agree on particular aspects of it, whether it's VA Everywhere or one of the mass initiatives or, you know, some of that but not all of it. Many such people need to be involved, but we need to be approaching this as an overall and concentrated focus of revolutionary work. Not the, again, the entirety, but an overall and a concentrated focus of revolutionary work whose parts are mutually influencing each other in a positive way, not spontaneously, but through our work to make that happen. Whatever part of that ensemble we might be particularly working on in an overall division of labor, this is the approach we have to have, that it's an overall process, an overall ensemble whose overall is greater than the sum of its parts, and whose particular parts and the work on the ensemble as a whole is dialectically interconnected and mutually influencing each other in a way to build the whole movement for revolution and build the party as its leading core. So that people who get involved out of particular concern, for example, about what's being taken up by one of the mass initiatives, through our work, become introduced to what's being taken up by the other mass initiative, or become influenced also by other things, such as what's going on around the environment, who become influenced by interacting with what's being done around BA Everywhere. And the way in which all this is brought together, and in which this sum greater than the sum of its parts gets expressed in a concentrated way, is what? Is through the pivotal role of the website/newspaper, which is, after all, one of our two mainstays. It is one of the ongoing, not only foundation stones, but active elements of our ongoing revolutionary work. And this means that the website in particular, but the newspaper as well in its own way, is a source for people to actively learn more about what is happening with the different components of this overall ensemble, but also a way that they learn more about the interconnectedness of all this, the way in which they all relate to the larger picture of the problem and the solution, to put it that way. And the website and the newspaper in its own way is also a way in which people learn about the larger world. Once again, going back to what was stressed at the very beginning here, relating to those paragraphs from part two of Making and Emancipating. The things that are going on that are beyond the contradictions that are taking shape and that are moving and changing things, and the dynamics associated with all that, that's in the larger world beyond the concentrated focus that we have now through this ensemble of revolutionary work. The website and the newspaper in its own way is also the concentrated way in which people are brought to an understanding of that in an ongoing way, in a developing way, in a growing way. And in which all these different elements, both what we're concentrating on and other things beyond that, are synthesized for people, not in one place, in one single article, but through the overall process of what's being done in an ongoing way by the website and the newspaper in its own way, people see that are getting a synthesis of how all this fits together in a larger sense, not in a reductionist sense of, you know, a narrow mechanical sense, but in the overall sense of the playing out, if you will, the struggle of different contradictions in the world and their interconnection, and how all this is at the same time as it has a life and dynamic of its own, or these different elements have life and dynamics of their own, how at the same time all this is fundamentally rooted in or encompassed within the ongoing dynamics of this system and its fundamental contradiction and the driving force of anarchy as the main expression of that fundamental contradiction. All this in a living way, through many articles which are short and pithy and popular, and some articles which are longer and more complex, through graphics and all the other elements that go into the website and the newspaper. This is what should be coming through to people so that they are actually, as Lenin said, this is actually the greater part of preparation for revolution. It is here that people are introduced to the new synthesis of communism and the leadership of BA, as well as the other parts of the ensemble, as well as what is going on in the larger world, what's happening with the environment, you know, the different contestations that are going on in society, the different things that flare up, but even the contradictions within the bourgeoisie itself and between the ruling class, imperialist ruling class of the U.S. and other imperialist forces and other reactionary forces in the world, and what's happening with the two outmoded in the world. All this is synthesized through not just one article or one, you know, analysis, but through an ongoing analysis and synthesis that's provided, you know, in a living way and in a timely way by the website and the newspaper. And this is the way whole generations of people of different strata, including the basic masses, are being brought forward and trained, going back to that thousands and millions, people being oriented and organized and trained as revolutionaries, as communists, as active forces and fighters for the communist revolution, working with that basic guidance on the contradiction of hastening while awaiting the development and emergence of a revolutionary situation and a revolutionary people. Now, there are a few more elements I want to speak to in terms of building the movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core. And by the way, just one last thing on the website and the newspaper. We should be constantly evaluating the website and the newspaper against what I just said. How well is it doing at fulfilling that role? And what is written and posted on the website and in the newspaper should be measured against that criterion or that basic orientation. How is it doing in contributing to that role of that website and that newspaper of being the principal means through which the forces of the revolution are brought forward, oriented, trained, and organized to be building the movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core? Now, a few other key elements that need to be spoken to in terms of, yes, building this movement for revolution and this party as its leading core, which we are building. I want to speak to the role of ideological struggle in fighting for the future. A couple of years ago, I spoke to some questions which were then concentrated in some files, which were called Boxing, and accompanying files on the mass initiatives and on freedom and necessity, which I definitely feel have been, you know, not sufficiently, people have not sufficiently gone back to them repeatedly to ground themselves in them more deeply, and they still have, you know, a great relevance and importance, and they are something that people should be, you know, individually, but, you know, perhaps in certain times collectively going back to and grappling with what's concentrated there. And without going into everything there, but rather urging, you know, the importance of people going back and digging into them themselves, as I've just spoken to, I do want to emphasize that what's in that boxing file is stressing, once again, as I said about BA Everywhere, this is a matter of building the movement for revolution has, you know, pivotal to it, as I've spoken to, transforming the thinking of blocks of people, But transforming the thinking of blocks of people is not something that's done in some sort of abstract way or by finding some way to entice people to think better. It's done by waging ideological struggle. Once again, overwhelmingly, among the ranks of the people, this is non-antagonistic struggle. Struggle not with the enemy. Although one of the main forms of it is exposure and refutation of what's put forward by the actual enemy, the actual ruling class. But this ideological struggle is a key component of everything. It's a lifeblood of everything we do, we are doing and should be doing and have to be doing. Waging active ideological struggle with substance, but at the same time in a compelling way, and often sharply, but never shrilly. And there's a difference between being sharp and being shrill. One we need to be, one we should not be and cannot be, must not be. But ideological struggle is crucial. And everything we're doing, including in building the ensemble and its different components, and in building the overall movement for revolution, and obviously in building the party as its leading core. And the boxing refers to, you know, what was said in that boxing file, that we should be getting up in the morning. I'm paraphrasing, I can't remember the exact wording, but paraphrasing, we should be getting up in the morning hungry for ideological struggle. Actively seeking out ideological struggle, not to beat other people over the head and not to make our narrative triumph over their stupid narrative, but to actually fight with people in a good way about what is the correct scientific way to understand reality and what is the implication of actually scientifically understanding reality and how should people act accordingly. This should be something we have a great hunger for as opposed to seeking to avoid. And as pointed out in the boxing file, often if you wage ideological struggle as you should, it does in fact temporarily disrupt the unity that's been achieved with a certain person or group of people at a given time. And this is one of the reasons why people often shy away from it. The other and perhaps even more fundamental reason is that they've divorced all this from actually what this is supposed to be all about. From actually building a movement for a revolution and actually carrying out a revolution with the party as its leading core. And so they just see things in immediate terms, and they've lost sight of and divorced this from the larger objective of which it has to all be a part. That's another reason why people shy away from ideological struggle, perhaps even a more fundamental reason. But also an immediate reason is it does often disrupt unity that's been achieved. And, you know, it's not inconsequential, you know, when struggles do need to be built. People do need to be united with to carry out the struggle that needs to be carried out to achieve the things that need to be achieved. So it's not inconsequential. It's not a trivial matter that unity gets disrupted. But how do you see this fitting into the larger process of actually building a movement for revolution and building a party as its leading core, actually hastening while awaiting, actually preparing minds and organizing forces for revolution, actually doing it with the, you know, the view of how this is leading to what will happen when there is a qualitative leap and a qualitative transformation in the objective situation, so that there's a revolutionary situation and a revolutionary people. If you're approaching it all from that sense, you understand that the temporary disruption of unity has to be, or not, has to be evaluated against those larger, that larger picture and those larger objectives. And then you fight to win people to a more advanced understanding and to forge new unity based on not their full agreement necessarily with what we're all about, but a further advance in their understanding of reality and what needs to be done to transform it. So we shouldn't be cavalier about disrupting unity that's been forged. Unity with people is important. We shouldn't have lightly disrupt that unity or undermine it. But even more, we should not be afraid to carry out struggle, including sharp ideological struggle, if we are keeping in mind what this all needs to be for in terms of our understanding of reality and how it can be and needs to be transformed. So ideological struggle is a crucial part, and this is what's being gotten at in the boxing file. And that we should be, you know, itching for ideological struggle in the correct sense and carried out in the correct way. At the same time, here's another contradiction. This should be carried out in dialectical relation with what's been characterized as the invitation from BA. Let's go on a crucial journey together in the fight against oppression. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But people should go back to this and look at it in dialectical relation with what I'm saying about ideological struggle and what's in the boxing file. You know, follow your own principles and the things that you find intolerable. Follow them out to their own logical conclusions and don't turn away. Have an open mind. Be openly searching out a deeper understanding of reality. And don't turn away from that process or stop short in that process because it makes you uncomfortable. And specifically, don't turn away from the understanding that all this is rooted in a system, the system that we now live under of capitalism, imperialism, and the answer to this is revolution and the ultimate goal of communism. Be willing to confront and grapple with that on the basis of whether it's true, i.e., a correct reflection of reality or not, and not turning away because it challenges your prejudices or takes you out of your comfort zone. Again, I'm paraphrasing, and people should go back to the original statement, which has been characterized as the invitation from BA. This exists in dialectical relation with what's in the boxing file about the importance of ideological struggle. And in the overall sense, the ideological struggle is principle. Because if people were already where they need to be in terms of their understanding of problem and solution, to put it short, then we wouldn't need, you know, then we'd be in a whole different place in the world, you know. But first of all, that's impossible that everybody would understand that at this stage where we're at. And even under communism, for that matter, there will be a need for continuing ideological struggle over how to understand the contradictions in the world and what to do in relation to them. But at the same time as we're carrying out that struggle, we should also, in dialectical relation with that once again, be applying that orientation that's in that, what's been called the invitation from BA. Now moving on, there's another point I want to emphasize, which is the importance of continually regrounding ourselves in, but actively wielding, the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America draft proposal, as well as things like the special issue on the history of communist revolution and the experience of socialism in the Soviet Union and China and the new synthesis of communism, setting the record straight on the history of communist revolution and on the role of the new synthesis of communism. These are particulars, but they're particularly important in relation to our own orientation, but also in terms of this element of waging the ideological struggle. Because as we have a sense and has been spoken to, there is a very important contradiction that even people who are very deeply disturbed by the state of the world and the conditions of the masses of humanity and what's happening with the environment and the wars and on, even people who feel that way, if there is a lid put over their thinking by the notion that this is the only possible system or the best possible system, even with all of its faults, and that every radical alternative, and in particular to this system, and in particular the communist revolution, has been discredited, has been a negative experience, has been a disaster or a nightmare for those who lived under it and for humanity in general. So long as that is the case, then people are not going to be able even to sustain struggle short of revolution, those struggles which we can approach as part of building a movement for revolution, but they are not even going to be able to sustain those struggles past a certain point without striving to come under the wing of the bourgeoisie, let alone be won to an understanding that there's something much bigger and overall that needs to be struggled for, namely a radically different world achieved through revolution and communism. So these are two concentrated expressions of the future. What's in the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America draft proposal, which, as we pointed out, is both at one and the same time very sweeping and very concrete. So it's something we should be constantly regrounding ourselves in, but also this special issue, setting the record straight on the history of communist revolution and the role of a new synthesis, because this is these embody an active vision of and an active fight for the future. And this is crucial in terms of people being able to carry forward with fight the power and transform the people for revolution. Not just for us to be able to carry that forward, but for other people to be able to sustain this and be able to advance and make leaps to actually come to see both the desirability, but also the possibility, as well as the necessity for this revolution and for achieving, fighting through to achieve a communist world. Now, the last thing I want to speak to, all this in terms of carrying forward our overall work to build the movement for revolution and the party as its leading core, as a part of the overall struggle in the world as a whole toward the final goal of communism. In that context, the last thing I want to speak to is internationalism and the struggle in the international arena. First of all, I want to return to the point that's been emphasized and is obviously a point of great contention among communists and professed communists, but something that's been brought forward since the time, especially since the time of Conquer the World, more than three decades ago now, that in an overall sense, in fundamental and overall terms, even in terms of making revolution in a particular country, as well as the overall advance of the communist revolution toward the goal of the emancipation of all humanity and establishment of communism in the world as a whole, the world arena is decisive. Now, here I'm not going to try to rehearse or go again once more deeply and extensively into all the analysis that's gone into why that is so. But I do want to refer back to hastening while awaiting, and where we originally got this formulation from and then applied it to our own process of making revolution as part of the overall world revolution. We actually got this formulation from Mao, writing during the period of the war against the Japanese occupation of China, the anti-Japanese war, as they called it, and, you know, in the larger context of World War II. Significantly, Mao brought forward this formulation, hastening while awaiting. What he said is, we're hastening while awaiting changes in the international situation. And what he was speaking to was that, not that they were passively sitting around waiting for, you know, more favorable developments in the international situation, suspending their revolutionary activity and struggle until there were such more favorable conditions. But on the contrary, he was recognizing two things. On the one hand, that they were, if you want to put it that way, the balance was not going to be shifted qualitatively to where they could go after state power in the country as a whole and through the defeat of the Kuomintang and the imperialists behind it, namely U.S. and British imperialism in particular. That you know, they were not in a position where those tasks were immediately on the order of the day. That the overall objective situation had not been transformed and was not going to be immediately transformed, even through their own efforts, to where that became the thing that was immediately on the political agenda, so to speak. But on the other hand, they were also never going to get to a situation where they could carry through even the new democratic revolution and then advance to the socialist stage if they sat by passively, awaiting external developments in the world as a whole. And external, I don't mean by external, I just don't mean outside of China, but external to their own efforts to bring about changes in the situation. So he, you know, in opposition to both those wrong orientations and tendencies, he stressed that what we're doing is actively hastening while awaiting larger changes in the overall international situation. And that applied both to the immediate focus of the struggle, which was to defeat Japanese imperialism, as well as to the larger revolutionary process of which that was, at that time, a decisive stage. What he meant was, we can't even at this point, go all out to try to drive Japan out of, you know, defeat its occupation of China. We're not in a position to do that. More needs to happen in the world as a whole before we can go, you know, to that task immediately and directly. You know, let alone carry forward the whole process of overthrowing all the reactionary forces in China and embarking on the socialist stage through the new democratic revolution. So, but he was saying, we're not in a position to do that even with regard to Japanese occupation, but we are in a position to actively struggle and contribute to the process whereby Japanese imperialism will be defeated and its occupation of China can be broken and the revolution can advance to yet another stage. And so this is what, you know, this was the formulation. Actually, it's ironic because we're attacked in the name of Mao for saying that the international, in the name of Mao, we're attacked for saying the world arena is decisive. But here was Mao, you know, in fact, you know, recognizing that the international arena was decisive. And if you actually look at, you know, and then we've adopted and adapted this formulation of hastening while awaiting. We've adopted it, but we've also adapted to the particularities of making revolution in a country like this in the context of the overall world situation. But if you look at, once again, you go back to that special issue, or you look at in general at the history of the socialist revolution, of a, you know, revolution with the final goal of communism, you look how it's taken place in different countries. It is not accidental. There are two errors we could make here. One is not to recognize that the breakthroughs that were made with the two great socialist revolutions in the world, in what context were these made? One was made in the context of World War I. The other was made in the context of World War II. And that is not by any means accidental. Failing to recognize that it's not that's not an accidental or coincidental relation. But it's, you know, for very real, material reasons. And it is, in fact, an illustration of how in relation to both those revolutions, the international situation has been ultimately and fundamentally decisive. That it was in the context of the shifting of world contradictions that particular contradictions in those countries changed and were changed by active struggle in such a way that it became possible to break through and actually embark on, you know, overthrow the existing system and embark on the socialist road with the different particularities in the two different countries. So not recognizing that and the implications of that is one serious error that could be made. On the other side, making an absolute out of that, you know, treating it in a metaphysical kind of way as if because that's been the case, that is the only way that revolutions could be made again in particular countries, if not through a world war, because that might destroy the whole world, but through some sort of similar international concentration of contradictions, that only in that context could some sort of breakthrough be made on the path of socialist revolution toward the goal of communism, would be equally wrong. Once again, revolutions are not made by formulas, and they're not made by, you know, formulas either in the sense of recipes or formulas even in the sense of some grand analysis that nevertheless is formulaic. But the point is that there is an interconnection in any particular situation, any time period, in any particular country between the situation in that country and the overall world situation, or if you will, the overall interconnected web of contradictions within which that particular country and the contradictions particular to it in a relative sense is situated. And what is the way to correctly apply this understanding? And what is the way to correctly, what is the correct orientation for actively carrying out hastening while awaiting in the way that Mao originally formulated it and in the way in which we have adopted and adapted it? This has actually been set forth in a very concentrated way in what is contained in Basics 2.12. And I want to just briefly examine this because we're accused. It's not just I want to answer accusations. I do. at least if they touch on anything important. But more fundamentally, it's important to actually stress an opposition to distortions of the correct understanding. What is the correct orientation and approach? And this is originally from Phony Communism is Dead, Long Live Real Communism, back in the early 1990s, more than 20 years ago. And here's what it says. And I want to read it and then speak to briefly to some particular aspects of it and the overall thrust of it. The achievement of the necessary conditions for communism must take place on a world scale through a long and torturous process of revolutionary transformation in which there will be uneven development. The seizure of power in different countries at different times and a complex dialectical interplay between the revolutionary struggles and the revolutionization of society in these different countries. A dialectical relation in which the world arena is fundamentally and ultimately decisive, while the mutually interacting and mutually supporting struggles of the proletarians in different countries constitute the key link in fundamentally changing the world as a whole. Now, this is worth thinking about and digging into in its entirety and overall, but I also want to just examine particular aspects of it and how they illustrate the overall, or how they fit into the overall. Okay, it starts off with something that most people who are consider themselves or claim to be communists would agree with. The achievement of the necessary conditions for communism must take place on a world scale. Now, this doesn't mean all at once, as the statement next makes very clear. But ultimately, communism has to be achieved on a world scale, or else as long as there are other, you know, as long as socialism exists within, you know, a radically different system exists within the overall world situation where there still is imperialism, then that's going to have an effect in terms of the inability of those particular socialist countries to advance to communism. So you can't have, you know, a bunch of different countries advancing to communism each in their own path, and then somehow it'll all add up to a communist world. This has to be achieved, you know, in the world as a whole, ultimately, even while, as the next part of the statement gets to, breakthroughs and advances also have to be made in order to achieve that overall world advance. So, you know, we're accused of saying, oh, you know, it's like we're accused of being essentially Trotskyites, who say that revolution has to be made in the world as a whole, or at least in a big part of the world, including especially the capitalist countries with the most developed productive forces, or else there can't be any socialism and anywhere. No, that's not what we're saying. We're saying something sharply in contradiction to that. We're saying something that is materialist and dialectical. Because what does it say? The achievement of the necessary conditions for communism, material and ideological, I'm adding that. But the achievement of the necessary conditions for communism must take place on a world scale through a long and torturous process of revolutionary transformation in which there will be uneven development. That means there will be breakthroughs, as there was in the Soviet Union or in China or different places. Uneven development, not all advancing in a uniform way throughout the world as a whole. Lenin made this point very sharply at the time when the Soviet Union was being established and was fighting for its existence with reactionaries and imperialist forces ganging up to try to overthrow it. And all these social democrats, Kautsky and all the rest of them, were, you know, hammering away at the Soviet Union that it was a, you know, the perversion of socialism, that it wasn't democratic. And furthermore, they wasn't an advanced country, it was a backward country. They should wait for the more advanced countries to gradually evolve to socialism, and then the poor backward Russia could somehow, you know, be led along by these more advanced forces, and so on and so forth. And Lenin made the, you know, the sort of the Alphonse Gaston point, you know, like after you, you know, you come to a major entryway, and after you, no, after you. He said, look, the problem with this is everybody waits till everybody else makes revolution. We'll all be suspended in midair, and nobody will ever make a breakthrough. So no, it's not going to be everybody together, or in particular, everybody wait for the more advanced, you know, productive forces of the capitalist world, for the working class and its social democratic incarnation and reformist leadership there to gradually evolve into socialism and to pull all the backward people along with it. It goes along with the story I heard about the the Soviet Union, some German so-called communists were visiting the Soviet Union in the 1930s, and they went to some of the rural areas where there were still outhouses, which, by the way, there are, were in rural areas and still are in some rural areas, and even the advanced United States productive forces wise. But anyway, they went around and they saw all these outhouses out in the countryside in the Soviet Union, and one of these so-called German communists turned to another and said, "Socialism is wasted in this country." You know, a classic expression of, you know, the theory of productive forces, and like, here they had all these advanced social relations they were struggling to bring into being, but because they still had outhouses and not modern plumbing, socialism was wasted there, you know. Well, this is the kind of outlook that says, you know, the Trotskyite kind of social democratic outlook that everybody has to wait until the whole world can go together, or at least until the countries with the more developed, advanced, productive forces, you know, in the capitalist world, can bring all, can break through or evolve to socialism, and by reformist means, and then bring everybody else along. That's not what's being said here. In opposition to that, what's being said is, this is a long and torturous process of revolutionary transformation in which there will be uneven development. In other words, breakthroughs made in different places at different times, the seizure of power in different countries at different times, and a complex dialectical, note, not a linear, and reductionist process, but a complex dialectical interplay between the revolutionary struggles, and note the wording, and the revolution of society in these different countries. In other words, the revolutionary struggles, but also places where it breaks through to actually seize power and begin revolutionizing society. So you have a patchwork, if you will, of socialist countries and other countries where the revolution hasn't yet broken through and achieved socialism at any given time. A dialectical interplay between the revolutionary struggles and the revolutionization of society in these different countries. But going further, a dialectical relation in which the world arena is fundamentally and ultimately decisive. That's one side of the contradiction. That's fundamental. What's the other side? While the mutually interacting and mutually supporting struggles of the proletarians in different countries constitute the key link in fundamentally changing the world as a whole. What does that mean? It means, where does the freedom of the lie for the communists and the mass of the people whom they lead? It lies in their waging the revolutionary struggle, in their doing all the things we've been talking about to hasten while await and to break through where they can. And here we go right back to the beginning, where I began today. And the statement in those six paragraphs of Making and Emancipating Part 2, nobody can say for sure, nobody can say with certainty. That principle also applies here. Just because the two revolutions of Soviet Union and China were made in connection with world wars, and just because that was not fortuitous or accidental or coincidental, does not mean that that's the only way it could happen, and it does not mean that we can say with certainty that until some, again, external factor, external to a particular country, but also external to the work that any revolutionary force is doing, until that somehow brings about all the ripe conditions for revolution, that nothing can be done, or even that no breakthrough can be made qualitatively to overthrow the existing system and establish a new revolutionary state. Nobody can say with certainty, once again, this is a very important principle, nobody can say with certainty in the context of the moving and transforming overall world situation what might be possible in any given country. The point is not to sit by passively awaiting. The point is to be actively hastening while awaiting, understanding that all the things that are concentrated that I spoke to earlier without repeating them all, in terms of what's in those six paragraphs that begin part two of Making and Emancipating. A dialectical relation in which the world arena is fundamentally and ultimately decisive. Not decisive necessarily at every moment in any particular country, but overall and fundamentally, ultimately and fundamentally decisive. While, as the other side of the contradiction, the mutually interacting and mutually supporting struggles of the proletarians in different countries constitute the key link, what we can grab hold of to seize freedom through those struggles. in fundamentally changing the world as a whole. That's the way it transforms. It doesn't transform by sitting around waiting for the larger contradictions to plop revolution into the lap of the revolutionaries and the mass of people. And nobody can know with certainty what the work of revolutionaries and the struggle of masses of people might be capable of achieving in any given framework. And it is not passively dependent on changes in the larger objective world and the larger world arena, even while in an ultimate and fundamental sense that world arena is decisive. Correctly and scientifically understanding the materialism and dialectics of that is crucial to being able to apply internationalism in the most correct and powerful way, and also to being able to correctly apply the necessary method and approach to make revolution in general. So I'll end with this. Once again, we're back to vanguard of the future or residue of the past. We're back to what's stated very sharply in that regard in the manifesto from our party. We're back to the need, once again, not to have a passive attitude, but to actively wage struggle, including very sharp and compelling struggle in the international arena, in dialectical relation with carrying out the work of, yes, building the movement for revolution and building the party as its leading core in this country as our contribution, or as a major aspect of our contribution to the overall world struggle for the final goal of communism, at the same time as we wage struggle in that arena for the new synthesis of communism and to bring forward forces, both existing among the existing forces and new forces which are not presently one, two, or organized around the banner of communism, to constitute and to fight as a vanguard of the future and not be consigned to being a residue of the past.